On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Public health officials, physicians on our program week after week explain we must do more to contain the spread. Basic steps, wash hands a lot, wear a mask, social distance, get tested. Governor Evers' plea in a statewide address last week, stay home, at his pandemic response presser Thursday.
We have a long road ahead of us, and staying home to save lives is one of the best ways you can help the farmers, the workers, the families, healthcare systems, and small businesses that need our help now more than ever.
Frontline hospital workers, what do you need? What are you experiencing? What questions do you have about the virus spread and what happens next in the state response? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Ryan Westergaard is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Dr. Westergaard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
So as we just blow past 300,000 cases and hospitals are at their max, what are you seeing around the state? What are you paying attention to?
Well, we're most acutely paying attention to hospital capacity, particularly with respect to staffing of hospitals and rehabilitation, meaning post-hospital care. That's really going to be the key resource in the weeks ahead as cases continue to increase.
What are you looking for out of the field hospital? Not many patients there.
Yeah, that's true. The field hospital was developed as an overflow for people who have a need for medical care for COVID-19, but don't need an ICU, don't need intensive care. That's only part of the problem right now. But one of the challenges that we're seeing statewide is a lack of step-down units, or what we call post-acute care. So people that don't necessarily require the level of care that's in a hospital, but might not be well enough to go home. This can be patients who have COVID-19 or any other condition, and can be a limited resource to find beds where they can get the rehabilitation services that they need in assistance with their activities of daily living. So there's multiple parts of the healthcare system that are strained right now. The alternative care facility helps with some of it, but not all, unfortunately.
You've been concerned about hospitals having to go on divert. Are you hearing of hospitals diverting patients elsewhere?
Yes. Well, to some degree, that always happens. There's the possibility that patients can be transferred at the level, for example, of the emergency department to another hospital if there's more appropriate care elsewhere. But in this environment, when a growing number of hospitals say they have no ICU beds at all, that becomes more widespread. A patient who needs a ventilator or who needs critical care services might not be able to be admitted at the hospital where they normally seek care, and they need to get transferred elsewhere. So that always happens to some degree, but that's one of the parameters, one of the variables that we're watching closely, because the concern is it's going to happen more and more.
Are you looking at numbers for what's happening within the ICUs, how long patients are staying, what those outcomes look like when the patient goes into ICU?
Not directly at the state level. What we do is we ask hospitals to report the daily ICU census and the number of patients who are on a ventilator. So we have some awareness of how many patients are in the ICU right now. And right now it's about 460 was the last tally. But as anyone who's worked in a hospital knows, people who need ICU, it can change day to day, hour to hour. So that's a pretty dynamic situation.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer, State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases, and he's giving us an update on the COVID crisis here in Wisconsin. Do you have COVID? What has your experience been like? Were you contacted by a contact tracer? How did that go? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kathy is joining us from Janesville with a question. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Actually, it's more of a comment, and I was on hold while your last guest was on, and thank you for taking my call. I teach in a district that's about 30 miles west of Milwaukee. And we, from the beginning of the school year, have been face-to-face, but we did give parents a choice if they wanted to be virtual. And it's a small number of people that did choose to be virtual. But about 40% of my caseload, I'm a special ed teacher, is virtual right now. We've had majority of our staff in and out. We've had all three of our kindergarten teachers are out right now due to an exposure and a positive case. And our 4K has been out twice. So when I hear people call in saying that they want to have kids face-to-face, teachers want that too. We absolutely want that. We know kids need that. Teachers need that. But this flip-flopping back and forth and not having consistency is absolutely horrendous for everyone. And to hear our legislators saying that, you know, Governor Evers is taking all these different steps that are not enforceable, it's so frustrating for us trying to do what's best for kids and best practice to not have any consistency or support from our state legislators.
Well, Kathy, and I'm going to pause right there and allow Dr. Westergaard to respond. There are 676 educational facility-wide investigations. What, as you look at the situation with schools, virtual or face-to-face, what are you seeing and what can you say about it?
I appreciate the comment, Kathy, and I hear the frustration that you're expressing. And I know many, many people are feeling that way. When schools have come back into session, I would say the overall sense is things have not been as bad as we feared. And it's not to say that we don't have outbreaks in schools. We have many, many outbreaks in schools. But I think we've learned that schools haven't been the single biggest factor accelerating transmission in the community. And that was something we were really concerned about. So in some ways, we've done better than we feared we might. And I think it's what we've learned from that is there are ways to do many essential things safely. It requires some flexibility, as Kathy was mentioning, and that can take a toll. But having the ability to identify people who are exposed, quarantine them at home for a period of time, testing as much as we can, and doing the things in the school like distancing and mask wearing, I think has really prevented a lot of cases. So overall, you know, there's very few good things about this pandemic. But I would say a lot of us in public health are relatively encouraged and pleased with relatively how few severe or large outbreaks we've had in schools. So I think we're learning a lot from that experience.
You have been concerned about students returning home for Thanksgiving break, for the holidays. What do you see there?
I think it's tremendously risky to have multi-generational gatherings coming up for Thanksgiving. And I think if that was, you know, one message that we in public health would want to communicate to the state in the coming weeks, that's really one of the most dangerous things we can think about. What's going on in transmission across the state right now is you know, what people have described as silent spread. Many cases that are getting transmitted are people who don't know that they're infected. We've known that this has happened. This happens with this virus, but now in the era where there are so many cases and contact tracing is under strain, a lot of people carry the virus and spread it without knowing it. So someone can be exposed to the virus, be infectious, feel fine, and then expose other people who are vulnerable without knowing it. And that's the thing we really need to do, everything we can avoid. So young people who are coming back from school are in that relatively low-risk category, and they need to be extra careful to stay out of close contact with people who are older or have vulnerabilities.
How often should they be testing before they head home?
I think getting a test before going home can be very useful, can tell people if they need to isolate. But I think it's also really important to know what it doesn't tell us. So if someone's been in an environment where there's a lot of transmission going on, a negative test tells you there's no virus present right now. But if you were exposed to someone anytime in the past 2 weeks, you could become infectious later on. So a negative test doesn't say it's safe to gather, unfortunately. But what it can tell us, though, is that by testing a lot of people, it can tell us whether we've been exposed to someone else who tested positive. So testing widespread serves a useful purpose, but it's really important we guard against that misconception that a negative test means it's safe to gather, because it might not.
Let's bring in Ryan now in Eau Claire. Hi, Ryan. What is your situation like?
Hi, I'm a service technician. I go into people's homes to work on electronics. We are considered essential. That's enough that I'll say so that my boss doesn't know who I am. And I am absolutely shocked and appalled by the number of people who are under county quarantine who either keep an existing appointment or make a new appointment when their services stop working because, and some of them not even bothering to tell the technician that, hey, by the way, I'm under quarantine until after the appointment is over or even at all.
Do you have enough PPE?
That should answer it.
Doctor,
we were given 3 cloth masks in June, July.
Dr. Westergaard, what is the situation like with Ryan explaining that going into people's homes who are under quarantine?
Yeah, I think it's similar to the point I was trying to make with my last response. I think there's a significant failure to understand just how important that principle of quarantine is and what that means. Essentially, it means you are a danger to others. There's a period of time where you've been exposed that you could start shedding virus and putting other people at risk in your environment. So understanding that during that quarantine period, it's really not safe to be in close contact with anyone is an important thing to know. I think it's very understandable. It's hard to fathom at this phase in the epidemic how many people should be quarantined. This is usually a thing we think is very rare. We think of quarantine with things like tuberculosis or Ebola, some of these high-profile but rare conditions. The fact that there's thousands and thousands of people who need quarantine, it can lead to what people have talked about as quarantine or pandemic fatigue. But it still remains very, very important. And if someone has been exposed because you know that you've been in close contact with a person with COVID-19 or you've been contacted by local public
health. We have to pause there. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Wisconsin's chief medical officer and state epidemiologist for communicable diseases. COVID is tearing through Wisconsin. The dashboards tell us the upsurge in our state has escalated more rapidly than those in other states. On Friday, the New York Times called us the state that has unraveled the fastest. Let's bring in David now in Ashland with the situation, what he sees. David, hi, go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Westergaard. When this pandemic first got going here in Wisconsin, we were told that we should stay at home and so forth. And I know a lot of areas they were actually getting ready with IDs for essential workers and so forth. But all these exceptions were made that it was okay to go to Walmart and it was okay to go to the liquor store. And why couldn't people be told a week ahead of time that, okay, now you have to go out and buy a couple rolls of toilet paper, get a little bit of food in the fridge, and actually make everyone stay at home for 2 weeks other than emergency personnel and keep that down to emergency calls only.
So David is asking, why is it so difficult to shelter in place for people, Dr. Westergaard?
Well, sheltering in place is difficult for everybody, as we've learned. I think the idea that sheltering in place or having a shutdown in a planned or more coordinated fashion to say we all need to agree that we can do this. Let's do the things that make it easier for us. Let's support each other and with groceries and other sources of support to make people able to stay at home better. I think David's point is if we could plan this out and make this types of support available to people, we might be able to do this more successfully. The challenge has been we haven't had consensus both among leaders or among the general population that this is urgently needed. It's becoming more and more urgently needed. And I think a public, statewide conversation about how we do this effectively and how we acknowledge the ways in which it's hard for people and support them is going to be really important. So I appreciate the comment.
David, thank you. Mary now in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Mary. What is your question?
My question is about how the field hospital actually operates. In looking at the pictures of it, it looks like one big gym with row after row of cots. And my question is how, if I were a patient, I might not choose to go there either, because I'm wondering about the privacy and how people go to the bathroom and be bathed and dressed and cared for it with looks like there's no privacy.
Mary, thanks. Dr. Westergaard, what is the situation at the field hospital and how it's administered?
Well, the field hospital was designed in collaboration with the Army Corps of Engineers and some local healthcare executives with the goal of providing the standard of care that is just as high as what we receive in hospitals. Every patient gets to make the decision whether they feel comfortable getting care in that environment. And people don't have to go there if they don't want to. But the intention and the design, and I believe the experience, has been it is acceptable, high-quality care that you would get in any hospital in Wisconsin.
Who is staffing the field hospital?
It's being staffed by nurses and physicians through a contractor. So we're not taking healthcare providers away from their posts in other health systems. So the state has hired providers specifically to work there. And their idea is that it adds capacity rather than shifts capacity from one system to another.
We've heard that there is such a scarcity of agency temp nurses, temp healthcare workers, temp respiratory therapists, that there aren't enough of them for hospitals in Wisconsin to rely on, and that this is a totally different situation than what we saw in New York City in the spring. Can you elaborate on the staffing situation?
It's true, Kate. This is a really grave situation. We can build more hospital beds, and we can provide, we've acquired more ventilators for severe illness, but we can't make new healthcare providers. We just can't. And there's going to be a situation, if we continue on the trajectory that we're on, where there's not going to be enough people, resources to care for everyone who needs it. The only way we can prevent that is to stop transmission. So it's not a problem, sadly, that the healthcare system can solve. It's only a problem that the entire community, the entire state can solve, because we are at risk for running out of resources.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer, State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases. He's briefing us on the state's condition in this COVID health crisis. Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha this morning. Hi, Mary Kay. What is your question, or what would you like to add?
Good morning. I have three things I'd like to say we can make improvements on. The first one is people at work are already getting tested, and you need to hire more people during a pandemic, so we need more food inspectors, okay? The second one is you go into restaurants, the customers are not keeping their masks on, and the servers don't have no gloves when serving drinks, okay? The third one is our box stores are not mandating masks, and a lot of people are coming from Illinois. I live in Kenosha. They come from Illinois, don't wear masks, and they go shopping, and nobody in any of these stores are keeping their distance. So if we can improve on these three things, we'd be a lot better.
Dr. Westergaard, what would you say there?
I agree. I think you're getting it. What I call combination prevention. We don't have any one thing that's going to stop this epidemic. We have to take all of the strategies that we've talked about, distancing, masking, and unfortunately foregoing some of the activities that give our life a lot of meaning, like dining out and gathering. And we have to do all those things for a period of time in order for us to get through this. And we have to do all of them together, and we have to get everyone to participate.
In the situation contact tracers are in, are there enough right now? And what is that situation like following up with positive cases?
The answer is no. We don't have nearly enough contact tracers. And it's unlikely that given the very high case numbers that we ever could. So the contact tracing, the program, which is initially designed to identify all the clusters and outbreaks and stop them. You know, we're not able to do that right now, but contact tracing can still directly save people's lives because transmission is occurring among people who don't know they're infected and don't know they're exposed. We can prevent new exposures by telling people that they were exposed to someone and need to quarantine. So we have to figure out how and when to do that in an efficient way to save the lives and prevent infections among the most vulnerable. That's our current challenge. We can't call everybody. We need to figure out who's at the highest risk and make sure that they know how to stay safe. And that's a work in progress. As you know, we're trying to figure out better strategies to triage, to get information that identifies who's at highest risk and use the resources we have to help keep those people safe.
Health departments are developing plans now to distribute vaccinations to residents. How will this rollout work? What is the plan?
Yes, that's one area where there's been good news. Another press release this morning that the second vaccine shows high levels of efficacy in the preliminary analysis of the data.
Moderna.
So we in Wisconsin and all of our state health department and our health departments are planning for when these vaccines become available, how do we get them out to people. So we have numerous existing channels through which we get vaccine for all infections out to people. And we're trying to make sure that all of those channels are prepared for these specific types of vaccines and have the capacity to serve the communities. And so our state health department immunization program is taking the lead on that regard to make sure we have all the pieces in place. And we're in close collaboration with the CDC, which is coordinating the federal logistics and the local health departments. So this is, this is really one of the exciting possibilities. It's a great deal of work, but the plan is under development and I feel really good about it.
Dr. Westergaard, thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Nice talking with you.
You too. Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Just ahead, we talk with a nutritionist about eating to improve our well-being. What are anti-inflammatory foods and how can they protect our heart? Are you on a diet or going on one? What do you want to know about that diet? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.